Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
And for today, Eid Mubarak, everyone.
Eid Mubarak. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting for us.
Do people know what Eid is, Aman? Do people know what Eid is?
No. For those of you who don't know what Eid is, this is one of the two religious holidays on the Islamic calendar, and it marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan.
Yeah,
it's a big deal. And for those of you who listen, it's a big deal. So for those of you who listen, we did do a Ramadan special about a month ago where we talked about Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan.
Yeah. And so, you know, we wanted to do an Eid episode, but then we were trying to figure out what do we talk about. We already covered Miss Marvel, the probably most recognizable Muslim superhero in comics. So while we were trying to figure this out, our dad actually forwarded this website that we came across, and it's basically, what's the name of the website? Is called the Hamzanama Comic Contest. And
yes, the website itself is hamzanama.org. That's spelled hamzanama.org.
Yes. So we were like, this is interesting. And this website was basically set up by a family who their son was a comic book artist, and he very tragically passed away very young. And so this family set up this website, this organization, this contest to really help out other comic book creators to kind of keep their son's legacy alive in that way. And the reason why they called it the Hamzanama is because, well, the name of their son, his name was Hamza, and the Hamzanama is this actual manuscript. Can you call it a manuscript? What do you call it?
So it was actually, it's originally an epic.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
an epic tale, very much like the Odyssey or the Iliad or the Aeneid, you know, in that same way, it's an epic.
Right.
But it's an epic that originated during the time of the Prophet Muhammad, actually. And obviously, you know, in oral tradition, it evolved over the centuries. But it's based on, very loosely, based on the character of Hamza bin Abdul Muttalib, who was the uncle of the Prophet Muhammad. And it's sort of his fantastical journeys, adventures, but more fiction than fact, really. And when I say more, I mean almost entirely.
Exactly. So like you said, Aman, this started off as this oral storytelling tradition. Which is funny because I feel like our podcast is a new oral storytelling tradition. Anyway, point is, people would tell stories of this man. What's his name again? Why am I forgetting his name?
Hamza bin Abdul Muttalib.
Yes, Hamza bin Abdul Muttalib. So we're going to call him Hamza from now on. So people would just tell adventures, right? There would be stories of him fighting monsters or having romances, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like this is how stories would spread, right? Before we had the internet, this is how this happened.
This is how people entertained themselves.
Right. And so
Netflix.
Right. And I think these first kind of came about in the year like 600 or something like that, right, Aman?
Yeah, around that time, mid 600s.
Yeah. So that's when these stories first started coming about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's fast forward to the 1500s.
About 1,000 years later.
Yeah, about 1,000 years later. So in the Mughal Empire, which was a huge empire and across the Indian subcontinent area, essentially. The third emperor of that empire, Akbar, he's like one of the greatest emperors of that empire.
He's called Akbar the Great.
Exactly. So he came into power around 1542 at the age of 14. And he had obviously grown up hearing these stories and adventures of Hamza. And he decided one of the first, I don't know how early on in his emperor reign, whatever he did this, but fairly early on, I think he ordered his like artist studio. He had a royal painting studio that was established.
Yes.
And the first major project of that royal painting studio was to turn the stories and adventures of Hamza into like
artwork to illustrate the stories, basically.
Essentially. Yeah. So there were it was a series of 1,400 paintings on cloth. There were maybe 15 volumes.
14 volumes. Yep. Yeah.
And it took them, there were over like 100 people working on this, and it took them more than 15 years to do this. Like, it's wild. It's amazing what you can achieve when you don't have Netflix in your life. But
anyway. And when you are filthy rich.
That too. Yeah.
So, I mean, just to give people a sense of scale, the wealth of the Mughal Empire at that time was pretty much the entire world put together. I mean, the throne, the Mughal throne, had so many jewels on it that it was worth more than the entirety of Bill Gates's wealth at his peak. You know, I mean, and that's the chair the guy sits on. Right. Like, the chair is worth more than your entire net worth.
Yeah.
than Bill Gates's entire net worth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's crazy how rich the Mughal Empire was.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, I mean, it's almost hard to fathom. I mean, obviously not exactly an equal distribution amongst the entire population, but the empire itself was very wealthy.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
But going a little bit more into these paintings that were commissioned, it wasn't just paintings illustrating different scenes from the Hamzanama. Each painting was accompanied by text to describe that particular story that was happening. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason that is significant and that we are talking about this here right now today is that this is kind of one of the earliest examples of a comic book.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what is a comic book if not a story told through illustrations accompanied by text?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So, I mean, this is... pretty much you could argue this was like the very first comic book, and it came out in the 1500s. And it's just, I love that it was based off of these stories that had been passed down through an oral storytelling tradition, which I think is referred to as Dastan. I was reading about this on Wikipedia. I don't know. Take everything I say with a grain of salt. But so I just think it's amazing that these stories, which I'm sure they changed and evolved over the course of 1,000 years or so.
Yeah.
That... I mean,
they must have, because the main character is doing things that are, you know, doing these feats, carrying out these superhuman feats that are really superhero-esque as we understand them, you know, like sort of like the non-flying version of Superman, in a sense, doing these crazy things. Mm-hmm. So, which really lends even more credence to this being one of the first comic books.
Yeah. And we're going to include links to this in the show notes, but you can see pictures of, so there's obviously out of the over 1,000 paintings that were originally made, there's maybe, I don't know, 50, 60 that are in different private collections, private museums around the world that were still preserved. Actually, wait, 140 have been known to survive. I just read that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's, man, I forget what I was going to try and say. Well, anyway, they were actually, I'm also just reading, they were unusually large. They were measuring around 74 by 58 centimeters. So, and they made 1,400 of them. So no wonder it's 15 years to make this.
So like approximately 3 feet by 3 feet each painting?
Yeah,
I think You know, I mean, that's sort of the scale to think about it. So super, super large.
Yeah.
Paintings that are still sort of, you know, you can put it on a table, flip through it like you would a comic book, and see these illustrations and read to the text that accompanies them to experience this epic in comic book format.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think now there's probably a whole collection of them at the Metropolitan Museum in New York City. And there's also a bunch of them at the Victoria and Albert Museum in the UK, which is always, you know, I love the conversation happening these days about how there's a lot of Western museums that have a ton of like Asian art, East art from the East and whatever, you know, in South Asia and all that. So
yes,
which is like awesome, which reminds me of Black Panther, that scene in the museum where Killmonger is like, Where'd you get this from? What did he say? Anyway, that whole scene is great. I should just include a link of that scene in the show notes.
It's a great scene that really cuts to the heart of how many people feel about certain artifacts and artworks being housed in museums in Western Europe and in the United States. Yep. So there's a lot of feelings tied to that. And that scene in Black Panther, I think, really captures the strongest of those feelings that exist amongst people.
Yep.
So sort of going back to the Hamza Nama and the character of Hamza, I thought it was interesting to talk about this because there's a lot to be said about our value traditions that are drawn on for comic books and superheroes today. So Superman is often portrayed in a very Jesus-like context. You know, he is somebody who is sent by his father from far away to save the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if there's not a Messiah mirroring happening there, I don't know what rock you've been living under if you don't see that.
Yeah.
You know, you have also Captain America and Superman who stand for, you know, truth, justice, and the American way. And these are very sort of idealized versions where these characters are our ideals put into action in these stories. And in that same way, I think it's important to understand the Hamza Nama, the epic of the Hamza Nama, as really coming more from a Muslim tradition, you know? And I think it's something that our comic book writers in today's world, it's something I think that they can turn to try to expand on the kinds of stories and the kinds of characters that are developed and told moving forward, you know? I mean, and the reason I am really calling out comic book writers and illustrators on this is because that is the wealth of where the stories come from for the modern movement of comic book superheroes and movies. All these stories that exist in with the Man of Steel and Justice League and the MCU, all of these stories, while there have been variations made from the original comic book stories, all of these really started in the comic books. You know, I think we don't give enough credit to the comic book writers and illustrators for giving us such original stories. So really, that's why I'm calling them out, because they're the only ones who are likely to listen. You know, I highly doubt
giving them a shout out.
Giving them a shout out and really directing this observation to them, because they're the only ones who are likely to listen. Which reminds me of, and you and I talked about this, Lena, this TED talk we heard a long time ago about the guy who developed the 99, which was a group of superheroes in the DC universe where the origin of their mythology really came from Islamic origins. And there was a deep And there was a fundamental difference between them as a superhero versus somebody like Superman or even Batman, because they're coming from a very different cultural background. They're being developed from a different cultural mythology. And I mean, I was sad when they canceled that DC canceled that comic book series. I think that, you know, they did themselves a disservice. Personally,
it could have been like a whole new franchise, quite frankly.
It easily could have been. It easily could have been.
Yeah. I almost feel like that whole idea was a tiny bit ahead of its time. Like the world wasn't ready for it, sadly.
Yeah. I mean, I had some mixed feelings. On the one hand, a tiny bit ahead of its time. On the other hand, it was too much like the X-Men, the way the group was formatted. And at the same time, I feel like it didn't last long enough to get into some of the really deeper, darker stories that it could have.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's sometimes coming up with these really amazing characters and stories, you have to give it enough time to breathe. You know, you have to give it enough. And that's why the Hamza Nama, I mean, they had 1,000 years worth of just people telling those stories on street corners and whatnot, and in royal courts, whatever. I don't know. It's such a shame when, whether it's a new comic book character or a new TV show or whatever, like it's just, it's not given enough time to really build its foundation properly when it could be underneath.
Right. So, right. I mean, it's interesting looking at the Hamza Nama and the differences in terms of the kind of what it was that people idealized in terms of good actions and whatnot. A couple of the things that Hamza would be doing in these fantastical stories was he would be convincing people to convert to Islam.
Yeah.
And he would be fighting these huge, crazy monsters and stuff and defeating them with his bare hands, you know? So it was like he was sort of showing this embodiment of physical feats as well as high moral character,
yeah,
you know, to the point where he could influence people. And the thing is that one of the big things that the reason that I point that out and really call it out as idealizing is because in reality, all right, the reality of the time also is that people were not superhuman. All right. People could not stop a locomotive, were not strong as a locomotive, and could not leap tall buildings in a single bound. But also, conversion has never been a big part of the Muslim empires.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of missionary work that has happened historically in Islam is not one that was so proactive. You know, I mean, if you think about it, most of the major empires in pre-colonial South Asia, all right, were Muslim empires. And yet the majority of the Indian subcontinent was never Muslim.
Yeah.
All right.
And still are not. I mean, actually, now there
and
are.
Still is.
Like, yeah. But still, there's plenty of non-Muslims in the Indian subcontinent. So,
yeah, majority, really. Yeah. And the thing is that it's interesting. On the one hand, Islam's emphasis was that people should come find Islam on their own, you know, and they should find it on their own. And Muslims should be setting that example, you know, like that's how missionary work was conducted. It was never about knocking on doors and telling people that they should convert and things like that.
Yeah.
It was more about get people to turn to Islam by seeing your example. All right. So that was one hindrance. Now, on the more pragmatic and realpolitik side of it, is that all of the Muslim empires, their main tax base was actually from non-Muslims. All right. So the way it was covered was that, so in Islam, all Muslims are required to pay, are required to donate a part of their wealth. All right. It is
every year, it is
one of the fundamental pillars of Islam is that we all pay zakat, which is, you know, give part of your wealth every year to charity. So Muslims would pay this, and the governments, the empires, would basically charge an equivalent amount to non-Muslims, except that money would go into the government treasury.
So those were taxes.
So those were taxes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And so if anything, the Muslim empires had a incentive to not have people converting.
That's true. Yeah.
So one of the reasons I bring that up is that we often in our world and in the world of comic books, we portray ideals, but it comes into conflict if you were actually to try to implement it in reality, in its full, in its entirety. You know, I mean, we think of Spider-Man as this kid, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. So he goes out, helps the little guy. He's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Now think for a second, if Spider-Man were real, he would be going to jail super fast because that is a major problem for our justice system.
Mm-hmm.
Being a vigilante is illegal. You can't just be going around doing citizen arrests on your own nonstop all the time. The whole citizen's arrest doctrine is supposed to be a last minute thing if there are not police around. It's not supposed to be the primary way in which to stop crime. All right. Like Spider-Man, Batman, these people would be hugely problematic if they were to exist in the real world. But we have these idealized versions.
Okay.
That exist in our story. So in that same way, the Hamza Nama is using different ideals to create idealized versions. And I just think it's important to keep that in mind, that there's this disconnect between ideal and reality. So the reason I bring this up for the Hamza Nama and bring up these different examples is that the Hamza Nama is taking a different set of ideals and turning them into action. But that same disconnect from reality existed back then, same as it does now for superheroes that we have today.
Right. And you're conveying different messages through these stories and the adventures of Hamza.
Exactly.
And yeah, and you're, you know, passing on whatever morals, values, different lessons. To kids. And lessons, exactly. Lessons. That's a good word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah.
That's good. I feel like that covers it. I really want
that was a very long rant on my part, and I apologize.
No, it's fine. Everyone just got like a mini PhD,
history lesson,
PhD presentation on that, which is great. I personally just want to learn. I have books on my side table about the Mughal Empire because I really don't know enough about it. I know the basics, you know. And I know of Akbar the Great, all this stuff, but there's so much. I mean, like you said, this empire was freaking huge. It was a major, major world power for many, many generations, you know?
Yes.
You know, so here's another way actually to put it into context for some people. When Queen Elizabeth I came into power, everyone thinks of England at that time and the golden Elizabethan era to be like this amazing time. No. England was really poor. They were poor AF at that time.
Yeah.
And I read this really interesting book. I'll include this in the show notes. It was called The Sultan and the Queen. I think that's what it's called. And it was basically about how Queen Elizabeth had to, because they were a Protestant nation surrounded by Catholic nations like Spain, all these other countries, they did not have many allies during or in Europe, you know? So Queen Elizabeth actually had to really make an effort to become allies, establish trade routes with the Ottoman Empire and the Mughal Empire, because at that time, they were the world's superpowers, the Ottomans and the Mughals, okay?
Yes.
Europe didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know what the hell they were doing at that time. They were like barely cobbling hygiene together, you know? I mean, like they didn't even... They didn't even have that down pat, whereas the Mughal Empire had beautiful water fountains and hygiene was a big thing there.
Yeah.
Stuff. So,
yeah. And they were doing, had anesthesia and were doing eye surgery.
Yeah. And they had,
I mean, that's where medicine was at.
And they obviously had the money to have over 100 people working on this Hamza Nama paintings for 15 years, you know?
On a comic book. They had they had 100 people working on a comic book for 15 years. That's how filthy rich they were.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, so it's just really that whole period of time. I don't know about you, Aman, but in my history classes at school and stuff, we always focus on Europe, right? We always focus on, oh, the Elizabethan era and Shakespeare and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you know what? They weren't even the badasses at that time. And
Yeah. I mean, not to knock, you know, the works of Shakespeare or anything,
but
it was not exactly, it was barely a blip on the global cultural radar.
Yeah. This is why I really enjoy going to museums and stuff, because I really like, I feel like we learned about history in a vacuum of sorts, and it was very siloed. You know, you learned about whatever Shakespeare, Queen Elizabeth I, but you don't learn about what else is happening around the world at that time. And or you know, you learn about World War II, but for some reason, even though it was a world war, we mainly focus on America and Europe, you know, their role in it. Like that is the majority of my knowledge about World War II is very westernized, and we don't talk about, hey, why was it called a world war? Because a lot of the rest of the world was involved in this or was dragged into it, you know?
Yeah.
So just the way that we are taught about history in this very siloed manner is pretty detrimental, I think, to us as a society.
I think so too. You know, I mean, everything has its context. And it's important to know what that context is. It frames things differently.
Yeah.
You know? Exactly.
So,
In the obviously, we did a lot of deep cut into history in this episode.
Which we love doing because,
you know, we are, it's not maybe today's episode was not the geek world as we normally think of it, but I would say the first comic book is still very geeky.
Yeah, I beg to differ. It was very geek relevant. And yeah, anywho, if anything, you should Google what the Hamza Nama is and learn
and
more.
We'll include links in our show notes. You know, yeah, there are, you can find some of the images in Google Archives, a lot of them in Google Archives. And, you know, there's background material on the Wikipedia, which is a great starting point. And you can obviously get English translations of the Hamza Nama stories, non-illustrated, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But still there.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot there for anybody who's interested.
Yep, exactly. Also, I love how the Google Archives images, they include the captions, whichever ones have been preserved and stuff.
Yes.
So it'll be like Hamza fighting off a demon, Hamza escaping from prison. And you're like, damn, what is he up to? So it's crazy. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everyone. And once again, Eid Mubarak. And
Eid Mubarak to all who celebrate.
Yeah.
And even if you don't.
Eid Mubarak to you too. Anywho, people are probably think we're trying to convert them.
Nah.
If anything, I hope this episode inspires y'all to learn more about the Mughal Empire. So there.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
Catch you next time.